from inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattona! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer, and somehow it's answered!
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point. Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good. He made it.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Owen Valentine, Ben Shulman, returning to campus now. We're just about a week away from the spring semester getting going, and that means that college basketball and the ACC slate are beyond getting going. Lots of basketball to talk about. We've got two games since our last podcast episode. We previewed Virginia Tech. That VT game was beautiful for Syracuse. They get their first ranked win of the season. And then the Virginia matchup just a few days later, not quite the same, but at the end of the day, Virginia is the best team that Syracuse will face in the regular season this year. So a little bit of a forgiving loss. You can understand that they lost by a good chunk, and I don't think that's going to be something that you see out of Syracuse again this season. But a big win and then a big loss, two opportunities for resume building wins, and it would have been great for Syracuse to win that Virginia one, obviously, in terms of continuing that momentum that they had really started to get going after that VT win. But at the end of the day, Virginia is not a game that you're supposed to win every single time you play, especially when you look at the discrepancies between these two teams at this point. But Syracuse has shown that they've got something and that they can compete with the upper middle of the pack of the ACC. And maybe Virginia is the one team that you can leave out of that conversation this year because they have separated themselves. Them and Florida State have sort of separated themselves as the top tier. And fortunately for Syracuse, they don't have to see Florida State unless maybe they cross paths in the ACC tournament. So as you move forward, there's, you know, we've talked about this a lot on our WAER airwaves and through our Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod. But what are sort of the big takeaways that you make of these two games and moving forward from there? What do you sort of look back and circle from those two matchups?
I think what you mentioned, the ability to compete with upper level teams. I mean, it's impressive to see Syracuse knock off a Virginia Tech team that easily. That was number 16 in the country. Like, that's no slouch. I know a lot of people aren't used to Virginia Tech being up there in the past 2 years, but that's a really good basketball team. So for Syracuse to handle the Hokies well, I think was really strong. I think my second key takeaway, though, is you go back to Miami and Joe and Buddy had big games. And, you know, when Joe and Buddy have big games, the team does very well. But these two are not, like, back. Joe and Buddy are not back. They're still not consistent options. In the Virginia Tech game, they were fairly non-existent. Joe had 5 points. Buddy had 7. Kadari had a big step up with 13 off the bench. And then you go to the Virginia game, and that's where they really needed them, to hit shots from the outside. And it just didn't come. Buddy was 1 for 7 from 3, 9 points. Joe, 3 for 7 from the field, 2 for 6, 8 points. Like, the efficiency isn't bad, but Joe Girard, you know, you want to say that 8 points isn't a great game for him, although this year it's pretty average, but just not looking for consistent contributions from the guards. And I think there's been some pressure recently. You saw in Boeheim's press conference after Virginia, a lot of questions about Buddy because he's taken a lot of shots and he's not making a lot of shots, and his 5 turnovers against Virginia didn't help the case either.
No. And the thing with Buddy is when you're a guy that is a shooter and is supposed to be the top shooter on this team, it's just tough
to see him play the way he has played. Obviously, when you look at the last four games, Pittsburgh goes 0 for 8 from three. Miami, he sort of figured things out, as you said, had a decent game. Him and Joe both played pretty well against Miami. Buddy goes 4 for 8 from three in that game. But Virginia Tech and Virginia, he's 1 for 5 and 1 for 7. So he has been very cold in this recent stretch. And he hasn't been, you know, lights out at any point throughout this season either. Just shooting, you know, 27.5% from three at this point. That's not what you're looking for out of him. But to go back to Joe, my big takeaway from this two-game stretch and even a little bit more extended is that Joe has been doing the job. And I think he started this season terribly. And I will acknowledge that and I'll see that. And I think everybody knew that Joe played very, very badly to start the season. But I think he's really sort of found his stride and found the way that he needs to play to make this team the best in terms of what he can offer. Because when you look at Joe and what he is, he's not a guy that really is supposed to be a 20, 25 point scorer game in and game out, or a 15 to 20 point scorer game in and game out. Obviously, he's going to peak in that range, but he's a guy that you sort of just need to go from 8 to 12 every game, somewhere in that range, right around 10 points a game. And I think that's sort of the rhythm he's found. He's doing enough to get to that threshold. And I think he has figured things out enough defensively that he is all right. And I really like the way that he's been competing in these last four or five games. So I think that's a really good transition for Joe to get out of that rut and sort of develop, you know, a play style that can be beneficial for this team. And that was one of my big takeaways out of that two game stretch. And then obviously the sort of lostness Syracuse gets when facing a decent big is something that has been circled for the past few years, obviously. But this year, even more with Barama Sidibe, who Jim Boeheim said in his show on Thursday has been practicing or returned to practice in some capacity. So the return on Barama Sidibe, I know we on this podcast have sort of just said Barama is gone until we see Barama check in, whenever that may be. If it's in the starting lineup, if it's off the bench, Barama is not playing until we see him hit the court, because there has been so much chatter about, oh, Barama could be back. Oh, Barama's out, you know, 4 to 6 weeks or whatever, 3 to 4 weeks. Barama is going to be back this week. Barama is going to be back this week. Barama's not back until Barama is back. And that's going to have to start to be the conversation. I think something that you were talking about on our last episode as well, but they struggle. They do struggle. And Jay Huff is outstanding. One of the best players in the ACC, one of the best players in the country for that matter. But Syracuse just looked like they didn't have anything in terms of defensive adjustments or the ability to get in his way. He scored the most casual 20 plus points I've seen in a while. It just, like, he didn't do anything, but at the same time he's got 20. So they've got to be able to step that up. But I really like what I've seen out of Joe, and I think that they're going to be able to be competitive down low in the majority of those games. Obviously Carolina's the big struggle, and Virginia's a big struggle, and rightfully so. But as long as they're all right in those other games where they're not playing against, you know, a top, well, in terms of North Carolina, one of the biggest teams and best big men squads in the country, and then in Virginia's case, one of the best bigs in the country and definitely in the ACC. So I think they'll be fine, but it does still alarm you when you look at a team that you sort of want to be competitive and you think can be competitive with a lot of these teams and could possibly at some points in the season, there's top 25 discussions. You've got to be able to be a little bit more competitive when you are facing the upper echelon of bigs.
Yeah, they just had nothing for Jay Huff, and it's been the same thing for 3 years. I mean, Jay Huff was doing this kind of stuff before Jay Huff was even a starter. I remember him coming off the bench and kind of punking Syracuse out of nowhere. It's, you know, it's, we can sit here and say it's a product of the zone, and to a certain extent, it's true that certain bigs are just going to thrive against the play style, but you can't let it completely consume the game. I mean, you know exactly what they're going to try and do. Kihei Clark sat in the high post. Virginia likes to bring a guard there as opposed to a forward like a lot of other teams. And then they just force you to come up, and he threw up lobs to Jay Huff the whole game. There has to be some sort of adjustment made, because Virginia could score whenever they wanted. Syracuse had to work really hard. And you could tell early on the game wasn't going to go well, because SU would have to put together a great possession or hit a tough shot at the end of the shot clock, and Virginia would go down the floor and lob it up and Huff would slam it home. So it's, there has to be adjustments made. I don't know if you'll face another big that's as daunting. I mean, North Carolina, the schedule's all messed up, so it's kind of hard to tell. You know, is North Carolina still a thing at the end of the season? But they got rescheduled, so I don't believe so. You know, Clemson's got some size, so we'll see there. But Syracuse, you know, has to be more competitive. A big man can burn you, but then you got to take out everyone else. You know, it's like the, we'll let LeBron score a million points, but not Bosh and Wade. You got to figure out, you know, something to try and neutralize this, because, you know, heading into the ACC tournament and hopefully the NCAA tournament for this team, there are going to be other talented bigs and you can't just roll over.
And I think like Tony Bennett just does such a good job, period. But to continue into that, like, when you look at how everybody puts that stretch four type player, maybe, you know, depending on the situation, sometimes a little more size, sometimes a little less size, but it's usually, you know, your combo guard or a forward that you're putting at the high post. And Tony Bennett just says, yeah, let me put one of my smartest players right there and just let him make the decisions. And Kihei Clark, as much as I love him, has not been great this season, but what he is a very smart player. And to put him in that role and have him at the high post and be able to shoot if he needs to, pass when he can, and pass wherever he needs to, or put the ball on the floor, I think they did a really, really good job at disguising that as well. And just consistently having people posting up for a split second and cutting through and being able to mix and match that. So that was on top of, you know, Jay Huff's performance. That is how you beat the zone. And if you're looking on how to attack the zone, you should just watch that game over and over again, because every Virginia offensive possession sort of just continued to allow them to get different looks and open looks and open dunks and open alley-oops, as you were talking about. And something that is going to revert back to the more traditional approach to attacking the zone, I think, is going to be this NC State game coming up on Sunday. And we've had this conversation. We just got off the Zoom lines with Alex Sawyer, and from him, he says they're going to return to getting a little bit more size up in the high post and going with Funderburk up there. And that's something that Syracuse has seen out of Funderburk in the past, I think, a little bit. But DJ Funderburk's going to be the guy that they look to get to at the top of the zone. And so, as we've alluded to, we just got off the lines with Alex Sawyer from NC State, covers basketball, men's basketball, women's basketball, baseball, football, and Miami and Hurricanes hockey too. Like, he does everything in the face of the earth in terms of his sports coverage. And so Ben gets to pick his brain a little bit about some hockey stuff and just an overall good conversation about NC State basketball and the condition they're in after losing one of their key players just about a week ago. We're now joined by Alex Sawyer. He writes for the 24/7 for NC State, covers the Wolfpack. If you go onto his Twitter feed, every sport imaginable from NC State is on there. In the last 24 hours alone, you've got men's basketball, women's basketball, football, baseball. It is action-packed. Everything you need to know NC State-wise over there. A lot of great stuff. Alex, thanks for coming on today.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
No problem. We just want to, you know, we always sort of start when we bring on these guests from various schools and various locations throughout, you know, college basketball and college athletics at this point, when we're talking with you. How is, you know, sort of everything been over the last, I think, 10 months at this point now in terms of your coverage, and what has been your big changes and your big adjustments that you've been making to continue to put out good coverage?
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's been quite the different year. You know, things got shut down and it was pretty much dry throughout the summer. But once football started back up, I mean, things were mostly good. Obviously, the Zoom meeting thing was the difference. But honestly, for us, that makes things a little bit easier, not having to drive out and stuff. But coverage has been good. You know, it was helped to have a football team that ended up being pretty good and playing well. So things have been good.
Well, I think you probably enjoyed the second straight year of Syracuse flubbing the last play with NC State more than we enjoyed the second straight year of that. But how has the coverage been in terms of access to players? I know that's one thing that we you know, have missed a little bit is there's no going into the locker room after the game. You know, we get who we get for Zoom, and that's about it for Syracuse. How's it been for NC State?
Yeah, that's been the biggest issue, I think, and that makes it hard to write some of the more fun, like, featurey stories because you're in a Zoom with everyone and you don't want to ask 10 straight questions that other people might not be interested in. So, you know, where in years past for football or basketball, we would have that access where we could get one player and pull them aside and talk to them for a while. Now it's who we get. And State's been good about, you know, giving us players if we want them and we ask for them, but it's still, you know, in that Zoom setting with everyone. So that, I think, has been one of the trickier things, one of the different things for sure.
Get into Wolfpack basketball. The reason people are listening today and sort of previewing this, you know, the first of two games in pretty rapid succession for Syracuse and NC State. The big news that, you know, we have to start with Devin Daniels. And how do you sort of just describe him to get things going? Like the value that he sort of had to this team and what sort of a impact this loss has.
Yeah, I think the impact of the loss can't be stated enough. Devin Daniels is the guy that on the offensive end, like, he gets it going. They go with Devin Daniels or they don't. I mean, he was averaging over 16 a game, and it's, you watch NC State play and they kind of run through Devin Daniels. He's the one that makes things happen. He's the one driving to the basket, kicking out or scoring. And then on the other side of that, he's one of the best on-ball defensive guards I've seen play. Definitely one of the best in the ACC. He really, you know, he can guard anyone on the other team. And, you know, NC State loves to try to get out in transition, force turnovers. That's something Kevin Keats has always been big on. And I think Devin Daniels is probably the guy on the team that maybe exudes that the most. He's the guy that is starting that. So to lose, you know, your leading scorer who kind of runs your offense, as well as the guy on the defensive side that kind of kickstarts everything, has that energy, that loss is something that is going to be really tough for NC State to try to find a way to kind of deal with that.
A little two-parted question here. You talk about the offensive production, you know, over 16 points a game, the defensive production. I'm sure everyone remembers he's been, you know, guarding Tyus Battle, Elijah Hughes the past few years. It's definitely been a really, really solid on-ball defender. When you look at replacing the production on both ends, who do you sort of look to? Obviously, I saw, you know, a little bit of your article saying it's going to be a little bit of, you know, replacement by committee. But yeah, when you look at some of the big names on the offensive and defensive ends to step in and take a little bit of an elevated role, who are we looking for?
Yeah, certainly offensively, you got to look for a couple of your other older guys. You have two forwards, a more normal five and DJ Funderburk, and then kind of a stretch forward that's a good shooter and Jericho Helms. Those two guys have been around a lot. They're both, I mean, I think at this point they're averaging around 11 points a game, but both of them have shown in the past that they can be the guy that scores 20-25 in a game. So I think you kind of have to rely on them to get some of the scoring, especially DJ Funderburk. You can run the offense through him at times. NC State has, last year he was really, really good. So you expect for him to step up a little bit. And then on the defensive side, you have two freshman guards at NC State, and they're really talented players in Cam Hayes and Shaquille Moore. They've played quite a bit this year. They're obviously going to have to play quite a bit more now. Shaquille Moore is really good defensively. He's someone that I think will probably see a really big elevation in his role, especially in terms of minutes. So it really will be by committee. I mean, especially scoring, but the talent's there. It's just, can you get the consistency from the older guys, the forwards, and then with those two freshmen, it's just, you're going to have to kind of throw them into the fire even a little bit more now.
Funderburk's an interesting case because, as you said, you know, he was almost the leading scorer last year. He's been the focal point at times, misses some time this year, comes back really hot to start, has tapered off slightly in scoring in the last few games. How do you assess his performance so far this year?
Yeah, he hasn't been bad, certainly. He's had some pretty good games, and he missed some early, and then he came back. State went down to Clemson, and he played really, really well. I think scored 22, 23 in that game, had another good game against Boston College, and then he missed some more time when State missed some more time with another COVID shutdown. You know, he's a good player, and you still see that, and he can find the basket. At times this year, it feels like he hasn't necessarily been the most consistent. He's been missing a little bit on the court, but then he'll turn it on and he'll score in the way that we can see that. So, you know, it for him, it's been a weird season. He's had injuries. He's had to sit out during the COVID shutdown. So hopefully you can start to get him more in games, more into a normal flow of things, and maybe see that scoring kind of take up on a consistent basis again.
I want to sort of look into the season as a whole right now. You sort of look at the schedule and the way this season started, going 6-1 with a big win over North Carolina, and then obviously the four-game skid. You're playing good teams in the four-game, you know, the four-game losing streak, but at the same time, you know, you have a Miami loss mixed in there. What was sort of the biggest shift you saw outside of obviously a little bit of an elevated, you know, competition from the first seven games to the last four before that Wake Forest win?
Yeah, I think you kind of saw NC State kind of move away from its brand of basketball. They weren't getting in transition. They weren't scoring points. Kevin Keats has said quite a few times this year that like their goal is to get a third of their points off of turnovers to force those to get out. And they just weren't doing that in those games. There's reasons for it. They were missing some guys in all those games. They had some injuries and they weren't able to really press, which is something they were able to do again against Wake Forest really well. So they kind of were getting away from that, not getting the transition points, not getting forcing the turnovers. And then also defensively, they just weren't very good. They weren't defending shooters very well at all. I mean, Florida State absolutely ran State out of the building that night. And then against Miami, they shot well. And NC State also on the other side of that had some issues with turnovers themselves. That's something that also got a little bit better in the Wake Forest game. They protected the ball a little bit better, but it still wasn't great. So I don't know, you know, it's hard to pinpoint a reason because it just kind of happened all of a sudden, but they just kind of stopped playing their basketball and it clearly started going down.
The Wolfpack, one of the big things they've done this year is shoot threes well. They, you know, they're one of the top 3-point shooting teams in the ACC, and a big reason is the Nebraska transfer, Thomas Allen. He's been really good so far. Was this expected? I mean, I don't think anyone's expected to hit 44% of their threes, but was this expected that he could be this relied upon as a 3-point shooter so far?
Honestly, no, I don't think most people expected it. He was someone that Kevin Keats kept talking about. He really liked, so if he's shooting 44%, obviously that's probably going to regress back to the norm a little bit, but he's been good. He started from the beginning of the season. He was in the starting lineup for the opening few games, and that wasn't necessarily expected, but he's played well. He had a couple of good games. He actually had a couple of his best games in some of NC State's worst games. He was one of the only guys that was getting points in the Miami loss. He was good again against Florida State and was able to shoot. So he's also a guy that I think, you know, his role hasn't been huge. He's been able to get shots and he's been able to, you know, he's been a good defensive defender. I think that's something you will see again, especially with Daniels out, is that's another guy that'll probably step up a little bit. And, you know, the 3-point shooting from him has been very good.
Two, you talked about it a little bit in terms of replacing Daniels' production, but I wanted to chat a little bit more about the freshman backcourt with Cam Hayes and Shaquille Moore. What have you seen out of them? They've both had sort of their ups and downs throughout the season, peaking at different points, but still being, you know, relatively consistent in terms of their minutes and being able to provide some sort of assistance off the bench for the Wolfpack. What have you seen out of those two this year?
Yeah, those two are they're very special players. They're obviously freshmen, so it's a little bit raw, but in terms of their ability and their athleticism, they're two guys that I think are going to be really, really good when you move forward. They have both kind of been up and down, like you said. Cam Hayes was really, really good early. He had a couple of his best games in the non-conference play in the first couple weeks, and then he did have to sit out for a while. He was one of the guys that during some COVID shutdown stuff wasn't with the team when they came back. And since then, the production's been a little bit down. Shaquille Moore on the other side of that, he kind of had a little surge in the middle. He was really, really good in the win over Carolina. But both of those guys are good players. They're finding their groove. They're, you know, peaking. They're going down. But they can both score. They can both pass. They're both pretty good defensively. That's a backcourt that I think as they grow together is just going to get better and better. It's just they kind of got thrown into the fire this year. They've had to play a lot, and also they had to play a lot coming off a, you know, off season where they didn't have a full camp. They didn't have the summer to kind of get into things.
I might have spoiled this already with the Thomas Allen question, but we'll see. Who has been the most surprising player to you so far? Who's exceeded your expectations this season?
Yeah, I think Thomas Allen's probably a good option there. He has shot the ball well. He scored. I wasn't necessarily surprised by the way Devin Daniels played. Obviously, we knew he was really good, but the way he was able to really carry the offense and be that guy and be more consistent than in the past. In the past, Devin Daniels had shown, you know, he'd have games where he'd go off and be really good, but then he'd have games where he'd turn the ball over and not score. He didn't really have those this year. He was good all year. So I was not necessarily surprised by the way he played, but maybe surprised a little bit by the consistency and just how, you know, solid he was as a guard before the injury, obviously.
So Syracuse's big sort of questions have been regarding the rebounding battles this year, and they've been absolutely murdered multiple times in terms of offensive rebounding throughout the season. Obviously, with a guy like Funderburk as, you know, your one of your bigs here, but there's a good amount of size on this team. How do they sort of hold up in the rebounding categories, and how have they shown that they're able to crash the boards this year? Who else should we be looking at in terms of, you know, being a presence down low or even from the guard position to be crashing the boards and causing some sort of issues for Syracuse with regards to second chance points and just extending possessions?
Yeah, definitely look out for Manny Bates. He's probably been maybe the most improved player for NC State this year. He was a freshman last year and he led the ACC in blocks, and that was the big thing, but he didn't score much and he didn't really rebound well. He's rebounding a lot better this year. He's, I think, leading the team in rebounds right now. So that's someone inside that's been able to do that. Devin Daniels was also a good rebounder, but obviously that's gone now. Jericho Helms is kind of the stretch four. He gets to the boards pretty well. And then both of the freshman guards can get to the boards. They've shown that. I think both of them have a couple games where they've gotten 5, 6, 7 rebounds. So there's rebounding around. I think Manny Bates is the guy to really look to inside. He's the, you know, prototypical center, the really big guy, and he's been a lot better at crashing the boards this year. As a whole, NC State's been okay at that. You know, they've had games where they've rebounded really well and out-rebounded. In the first Carolina game, I don't think they out-rebounded Carolina because you don't out-rebound Carolina, but they were competitive in it, and that was one of the reasons I think they played well that day and they were able to get the win. So they've had some games where they've done really well on the glass and then some other games where they haven't been as good, but there definitely is the ability, quite a few guys that have shown that they can, you know, get to the glass and get the boards.
How do you think that size translates against the 2-3? Obviously having bigger players is helpful to get into some of the weak spots, but you almost need that kind of playmaking high post big as well.
Yeah, I think that translates well with Funderburk. I think he's a guy that can have success because he is that, you know, playmaking big. He can do a lot of things. Manny Bates a little bit less. He's not a guy that necessarily creates a ton for himself, more of a, you know, old school post player. But definitely with Funderburk, that helps. Jericho Helms is another guy. I mean, he's tall. He's, I think, 6'7", 6'8", and he can really shoot as well and kind of find that space. So I think it does translate well. I think NC State, you know, matches up fairly well against Syracuse if you can get that production from Funderburk.
This is a question that I've, you know, like to get into a little bit with regards to the upcoming matchup with Syracuse and NC State on Sunday. If NC State is to win this game, it is because they did blank. And if Syracuse is to win this game, it's because NC State did blank. What do you think the keys are for this game in terms of those two, you know, fill in the blanks, but whatever you want to make of them?
Yeah, I think the big key for NC State, if NC State wins, it's because they were able to force turnovers, get out in transition, kind of find their offense in that way. Because, you know, first game without Devin Daniels, now you're going to want to try to find more of that offense and transition because the half court sets have been, you know, blown up. You don't have that guy that's normally run those. So if you can force turnovers, get points off of those turnovers, I think that's good for NC State. For Syracuse, I think one of the big keys is just going to be shooting well. That's something that's killed NC State in their losses, is just they haven't been able to really defend the outside shot well. They've allowed teams to, you know, shoot really high percentages. Florida State shot an astronomical percentage, but, you know, the Carolina loss this past weekend, the Miami loss, those teams all shot well in those games. So if Syracuse can hit shots and, you know, find those open shots, that's something that NC State has struggled with.
All right, I got to transition you away from NC State basketball now, because I saw you also run Canes Country, the SB Nation for the Carolina Hurricanes, and I'm actually from from Toronto, so I'm a very big hockey fan. And there was a very polarizing figure in Toronto that now resides in Carolina, and his name is Jake Gardner. And I just want to hear your thoughts. This is for the few hockey fans listening to the Ostrom Avenue podcast. What are your thoughts on Jake Gardner as a defenseman?
So we at Kane's Country are pretty high on Jake Gardner. We've found the positives in him. It's actually funny. He was on the Zoom yesterday. We talked to him about kind of maybe being a little more comfortable this year, looking a little better through the couple games they've played. He was good last year. I think there were times where fans weren't thrilled with the way he did, but you know, when you look at like his actual numbers, kind of the analytics stuff, like his production was good. I think he's a good player. And I think like, that's a guy that the Canes, you know, I think that was a good signing. That's one they have there to solidify it. So I like Jake Gardner.
I would agree. I think that he had a few really bad blunders and yeah. But to give Owen a rest, I'll hand it off and stop asking about hockey.
Well, maybe this does bring hockey back up, but I mean, in the simplest terms, you look at your Twitter profile picture, there's a baseball bat, a basketball, and a Carolina Hurricanes shirt. What's the favorite sport to cover? And where sort of your allegiance to, like, if you could only pick one to cover for the rest of your life, which sport are you rolling with?
Yeah, I'm a baseball guy. I played baseball, you know, growing up through high school, and that's always been, you know, my number one sport. I enjoy covering everything. I really do like that, but definitely baseball would be the one I would go with.
One last question before we let you go. Obviously, we talked about it a little bit with, you know, two games between Syracuse and NC State in a very, very short span of time here with, you know, just about 10 days in between. We've got a play-by-play crew going down there. When we go down to Carolina, where is the food spot for them to stop? Where's the place or two that they need to hit on their trip down?
Definitely find some barbecue. I'm not honestly a aficionado of barbecue. There's a lot of good places around. I'm not the one. If you want a real good NC State spot, it's one I've been asked this question before I've used. It's called Amedeo's. It's an Italian restaurant, like right by campus. You walk in there, they have more NC State memorabilia, just sports stuff all over the place than you can imagine. So that's one I always give. It's right by campus.
All right, I'll tell them to definitely check it out and grab a bite and see all of the sports memorabilia. Alex Sawyer, thank you so much for taking the time today. You can give them a follow on Twitter. Get a look at all of this, you know, miscellaneous sports, every sport on the face of the earth at Alex Sawyer on Twitter. Thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
One more thank you to Alex Sawyer, and, you know, good conversation there. And with another game against NC State less than 2 weeks away, maybe he could become a recurring guest depending on his availability moving forward in the next couple of weeks. Good conversation there and leaves us in a fun little, I don't know, up in the air spot, because obviously with the loss of Devin Daniels, no one really knows what North Carolina State can bring to the table. Obviously, you got a small sample size at the end of the Wake Forest game where they were able to get a win, but Wake Forest is not the greatest team. They're at the bottom of the ACC, but what they do, for whatever reason, they give everyone a bit of a run for their money, and Wake is always competitive in these games, and NC State able to break a four-game losing streak and get back into the win column regardless. But this is going to be a game that Syracuse needs, and Syracuse needs both of these games when they're playing NC State. As you look at where they stand, and because it's, as we've said so many times this season, it is a weak ACC performance top to bottom, pretty much. The top of the ACC looks good, but definitely not as good as they have in years past, and it's a struggle. So Syracuse is going to need to rack up wins to get off of the ever lingering tournament bubble that they have built a massive apartment complex in, and they just continue to live there. And for whatever reason, they're right back there again this year. So these are two games in the next, you know, 10 days or 11 days, whatever it might be, that Syracuse really needs. And I think it comes down to just getting into that gritty aspect of things, and knowing that you're going to have to win this game regardless of what it takes. You're going to have to win both regardless of what it takes. If it's an ugly game, so be it. You've got to be on top in both of these games, because these are in a stretch of difficult games. We've talked about it. You're halfway home pretty much. These are the games you need, because you've got two NC State games that are bookending Louisville and Clemson. And although Clemson sort of had a bit of a rut these past couple of weeks, they're still a very talented team, and to beat Clemson on the road is even more difficult. So it's a tough four-game stretch that are bookended by NC State. You've got to get those two wins, because you know that Louisville and Clemson could easily be two losses. So to be able to get out of there 2-2 and to be able to get out of that six-game stretch at 3-3, I think is really, really crucial for Syracuse moving forward.
This game especially, I mean, just isolating January 31st, I think this has to be a win for Syracuse. You know, you never want to see a player get injured, but this is a huge competitive advantage for the Orange that Devin Daniels is not there. That's no secret. He's relied upon by the Wolfpack as their leading scorer and close to their leading rebounder as well. So, you know, you're playing NC State at home. If you're Syracuse, that's a must win. Then, you know, if it's a big blowout, then, you know, I have big expectations going to Raleigh on the 9th and seeing if Syracuse can win that game. If it's close, then, you know, who knows, maybe they adjust to Devin Daniels and it's a more without Devin Daniels and it's a more competitive game going forward. But this one's a must win to me. You know, another thing we're talking about, all the, you know, four game stretches and stuff. I thought, you know, Quentin Hillsman, the coach of the women's basketball team, and we'll hear some women's basketball on WAER soon. You know, he said something to his team about, you know, every game this year is so much more important because you don't know when you're going to get shut down. So you have to get every single win you can. And Syracuse, frankly, you know, Virginia Tech was the first good win Syracuse has. And NC State, it wouldn't be as good of a win as we probably thought it was about a week or two ago. You know, the loss of Daniels and the losing, or not losing streak now, but the losing skid 4 or 5. It hurts the win, but, you know, Syracuse, you know, I think needs to beat more competitive teams in the ACC. No offense to Miami, who actually has been competitive, but hasn't won very many games. So this, you know, I think it's a big win over NC State. And then you try to carry that into a tough stretch, as you mentioned, that four game stretch of 4 games in 10 days, all against pretty talented teams. You know, the NC State ones look like probably the most probable wins for Syracuse of the bunch.
Yeah, and everything sort of is going for Syracuse, especially in this first matchup. You've got no Devin Daniels, you're playing at home, and you're really well rested. I think, 6 days between games at this point? This is the biggest opportunity in this stretch and the best opportunity in this stretch for Syracuse to get a win, and you really have to. With as much rest as you've had, with Devin Daniels being out on your home court, despite there being no crowd, there's still some advantage to playing at home. This is a game that you 100% need and cannot lose. And I think the key to it is just getting out there and playing Syracuse basketball. You've seen it. You've seen the glimpses, but you can't try and make these silly adjustments off the top. And you've got to be able to play defense start to finish. That is my key. You've got to play defense start to finish. There have been so many games where it takes Syracuse 5 minutes, a half, 30 minutes of a game to figure out how to handle teams defensively. You've got to be able to do from the start and play solid defense. Limit the threes. This is an NC State team that doesn't rely on the three. They don't shoot it all that much, but when they do it at a really effective clip, over 37% as a team, but they don't rely on it. But if you give them those open threes, they're going to hit it. So you've got to be rotating really well from the start. You've got to be ready, because this is a team that, as you've seen so many times throughout the season, can get down quick because of the way this defense is. And because of, you know, obviously I say Girard's been playing better at the top of the zone and better defensively, but Girard and Boeheim are by no means quality in terms of the top of the zone compared to every 2-3 zone Jim Boeheim has coached in his career. They are not at the top of that list by any stretch of the imagination. So you've got to be able to limit them off the bat, because you saw even in a game where you come back and you win against Miami, but you get down really big early and really fast. And that's something that you can't put yourself at an even greater disadvantage in a team without a lot of depth that does not really have the ability to go off. They have the ability to go off, but haven't been able to because of the limited shooting and the limited three-point production. A team that relies on the three and a team that has been advertised as a three-point shooting team, you can't come back when you're not hitting your threes, and so you can't dig yourself a rut. So for me, Syracuse has to play solid defense start to finish. You can't let them start hot and get these open threes and easy looks, because even though NC State is a team that is in the middle of the pack of the ACC already, they're not an overwhelming team. They sit at 70 in KenPom. You can't let them get hot because they still can beat you. This is a struggling team. This is a team that has lost its biggest piece, its best offensive player, and its best defensive player, as Alex Sawyer was saying. If you let them shoot at the start and get hot and get into a nice little groove, and they get up, what, 15-6, 15-5, 11-2, as you saw in the Miami game, it's tough for Syracuse to get out of this rut, regardless of who you're playing. You've got to do it start to finish.
Yeah, three-point shooting is obviously, you know, big in almost every Syracuse game. And I think another thing that's big in almost every Syracuse game and will be here is the turnover battle. It's something that Syracuse has succeeded in really well this year. They don't turn over the ball very much. Their turnover percentage of just above 16 is top 40 in the country. And, of course, they force a lot of turnovers. So I think that you know, when we talk to Alec, that was a big thing he said. When NC State was playing bad, they were turning it over and they weren't causing enough turnovers. So for Syracuse, you know, there's going to be, you know, more inexperience handling the ball on the other side because Devin Daniels isn't contributing. So what you have to do is get some of these young guys to cough it up a little bit. That always helps jumpstart the SU offense. And the more Syracuse scores, the less NC State will get into its transition game, which Daniels said was also big. So I think you create your offense through your defense, and then it'll help your defense again. And then it just kind of snowballs and snowballs and snowballs for Syracuse.
6 days between the last two games for Syracuse. They have not beaten NC State in their last three matchups. The last win taking you back to when John Gillen went off against NC State, drops 45 in an overtime Syracuse win. Syracuse is going to need maybe not a 45-point performance out of one of its guards, but it's going to need one of the guards to play a decent game, and we'll have to wait and see how that goes. A little bit of an odd start time, 6 p.m. tip-off tomorrow, 5:30 countdown to tip-off on WAER 88.3 FM or WAER.org or the WAER app, wherever you like to listen. Lots to talk about as we just got through. Lots more to talk about, and we'll continue our coverage on Twitter, basically, leading up to tip-off at Ostrom Avenue Pod. We've got our picks coming out tomorrow morning. The picks have become a bit of a stretch, Ben. You've got to be able to continue to get a couple of games back. You just got to
I clawed one back.
You've got some climbing to do, though. I'll tell you that much. It's I have been very hot. And in multiple betting aspects of the world, I've been very hot. But you know, once you're hot, you can only cool down. And we'll see how long this, what once was a 6-point lead, now down to 5. And Ben's been picking pretty quality games too. So we'll see where things end up. At Ostrom Avenue Pod on Twitter, give us a follow over there. Feel free to tweet at us. We'll love to shout you out on the pod. We'd love to get into those conversations over there at Ben Shulman 7, at OValentine14. And while you're hitting those follow buttons, while you're typing out your Twitter replies, go over to wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you subscribe to us over there. Give us a rating, give us a review. They go a really long way, and we love to see your feedback. It's been a while since we've gotten a review in one of our podcast services. So let's see what we can do, because I'd love to hear your feedback in any way, shape, or form. For Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine. This has been the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. We'll catch you next week. Stay safe.